WDIY presents a special news feature. The global climate emergency requires a global multi-faith response. On March 11th, people of diverse religions are coming together in a bold, new way to work for climate justice on a day called, quote, Sacred Earth, Sacred People, unquote. Green Faith, an international and interfaith organization, has issued a statement, some of which is quoted here. We are united by a fundamental belief that all people, all living things, and the earth are sacred. As we consider the state of the world today, our hearts overflow with concern. A far better future is possible if our collective response to the pandemic and the climate crisis is guided by compassion, love, and justice at a scale that meets this moment. We must create a new culture, politics, and economy of life that heals people and the planet. The work to create this future begins now. Congregations in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania are part of this movement, and in full disclosure, I am active in my congregation, Trinity Episcopal, which is participating in Green Faith trainings, discussions, and actions. Father Fletcher Harper is Green Faith's executive director. A pioneer of the global religious environmental movement, he helps spearhead the faith-based fossil fuel divestment movement and organizes faith turnouts at major climate mobilizations. Welcome to WDIY, Reverend Harper.
It's great to be with you.
What I'd like to know is, what did Green Faith's beginnings look like? How did it all start and when?
It started back in the early 1990s when a group of Jewish and Christian volunteers with a Buddhist or two thrown in began getting together in New Jersey and realized that there was no religious engagement around the environment and climate change, and started getting educated about what did their religious and spiritual traditions teach about that, what were some of the issues, just literally trying to wrap their heads around what would it look like for religious groups to get involved in these issues and why. And it's developed quite a ways over time, but that was the starting point.
Green Faith is an international movement, and so what other countries are represented?
So we have partners in, more than a dozen different countries: Brazil, Chile, Indonesia, India, Australia, South Africa, Nigeria, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Kenya, Uganda, the UK, Canada, obviously in the US, and we have relationships with faith community leaders in a host of other countries, the Philippines and Vanuatu and Sweden and Norway and Finland. And so it's in a formal sense, the network that we've launched is in those first 13, 14 countries that I mentioned, but it's growing because this movement is growing. More and more grassroots people of different religious and spiritual backgrounds just get that this is a big deal. This issue matters a lot.
So what faith communities are involved around the world? There's so many. Can you name a few?
We work consistently with Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, Sikh, Jain, Baha'i, Unitarian, Shinto, Taoist. It's a pretty wide range. And I would say we see this awakening going on in all of these communities. And I think it's also really important to recognize that there's tension within all of these communities. Very often the pattern we see is that the more fundamentalist, the more conservative elements within these religions and spiritual traditions do not prioritize caring for the planet, addressing climate change, and sometimes are even closely allied with the political and economic forces that are the cause of the problem. So I don't want to make it sound like, that there's a tension within religion that has to get hashed out in a serious way. And that's, what we're trying to do is push and organize as hard as we can to get religion really moving in the direction that it needs to.
I understand that Green Faith is spearheading a major action for March 11th of this year. What's that going to look like in various places?
It's going to look amazing in various places. So we chose that time in March on the 11th to signify that we're at the 11th hour, that we're at a moment of urgency. It's 8 months before the next round of big United Nations climate negotiations. So it gives governments time to get the message that a large multi-faith community wants them to do the right thing. So in Australia, we've got churches and Buddhist temples ringing their bells and sounding their gongs at 11 a.m. In different parts of Africa, religious groups are doing outdoor processions, socially distanced, to show their concern about climate change. Here in the U.S., in Tallahassee, Florida, there's a multi-faith group along with a group of churches right near the state capitol that are ringing their bells and making whatever religious sounds they can make at 11 a.m. to signal to the legislature that they want Florida's government to take, state government to take strong action. So religious groups making a public appearance, a public sound, which is even more notable now during COVID, connected with a strong social media and traditional media outreach campaign to send the signal that it's really time for some very ambitious commitments from government leaders.
What can a single person do to join others or to get their congregation involved in green faith?
So people can, for the Day of Action, go to www.greenfaith.org and click on the action button, and you'll get lots of resources and ideas about how your mosque, your temple, your church, your synagogue can get involved. And even if you're just a person who considers yourself to be spiritual but not religious, you are totally welcome. This is a big tent, and we work with people who are part of organized religious groups as well as passionate people of widely diverse spiritualities.
One last question. How will you encourage folks to be active beyond personal virtue habits like conserving electricity in their homes? The issue is so much bigger than that. How do you convince people that they can make a difference?
What we do is, first of all, we invite people to reflect on when they themselves began to care. That gives people a personal stake in the issue. We share stories from people impacted by climate disasters of various kinds, droughts, floods, wildfires. And that evokes a sense of a combination of compassion and also frustration and anger at the governments that have been inadequate in their response, and the fossil fuel industry, industrial agriculture, other major corporate sectors that just have really done the wrong thing consistently for decades on this issue. And then we give people opportunities to get involved in high-impact campaigns. We've been a leader in the fossil fuel divestment movement, which is having a big impact in terms of weakening the political and financial clout of the fossil fuel sector. We're involved in a campaign that's called the Stop the Money Pipeline campaign that's about pressuring banks to just quit financing new fossil fuel infrastructure when we know we can't afford that, the climate can't afford that. We're involved in an initiative called the Interfaith Rainforest Initiative, which is organizing religious groups in major tropical rainforests for the protection of rainforests and the rights of indigenous communities. So it's by showing people that these issues are big, there are massive government and corporate forces behind them, and we need to take action at a collective level, really, to change the game.
I think what you're saying is that it's good that everybody tries to conserve electricity and water in their homes, but it's so much bigger than that that we need us to work together.
Yeah, we think of these things as interlocking gears. It's important that people develop those personal virtues, but they need to tell others about that. They need to convince others to do it. And we need to think in terms of action that can tip the scales at the systemic level, because that's the vital thing. And we have now in the U.S. an opportunity because there is an administration that wants to prioritize climate change and that will be receptive to moral pressure from the grassroots. And that's always what changes history. And so now is our time to rise as people of different faiths really concerned about these issues.
Well, Reverend Harper, thank you so much for your time and your dedication and your insights.
It's great to be with you.
We are glad to welcome the Reverend Dr. Pamela Payne, rector of Trinity Episcopal Church in Bethlehem, to explain why care of the earth is a matter of religious faith.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Of course, you know, I speak from my own experience in the Christian faith, and we look to Jesus' own affirmation, but that Jesus' affirmation is also deep from the heart of his own Jewish tradition, and that is that we are to love God and to love our neighbor. And loving and caring for creation is very much a part of loving God and loving neighbor. Creation is a gift of God's grace and also the manifestation of God's very self. When we Christians proclaim that the Word was made flesh, we understand that God is incarnational, is enfleshed and present within all creation. And to damage or destroy and denigrate creation is in some way even to harm God too, or minimally to show lack of love and reverence for the Creator of heaven and earth. And the call to love our neighbors includes all humans, but all creatures as well, and even the earth itself, the atmosphere, the oceans, the rivers, the mountains, all the clusters of ecosystems that evolved and gave rise to life as we know it.
Well, Reverend Dr. Pamela Payne, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Rabbi Michael Singer of Congregation B'rith Shalom Synagogue in Bethlehem joins us to discuss creation care from the Jewish perspective. Thank you for joining us, Rabbi Singer.
It's always a pleasure.
What tradition or text in the Jewish faith would lead people to environmental concern and actions?
You know, the story of creation in the Jewish tradition isn't meant to be literally the scientific view, but instead, while science asks the question how, the creation story asks the question, why does it matter? Why does the Torah, why does the Hebrew Bible start with creation? And it starts with creation for a number of reasons or meaning. The first is that the world wasn't made by us. Human beings didn't create the universe. And this is a huge thing because it's a humbling and a recognizing that there were things here before us. Even the worms, the rabbis say, were created before us. They existed before we did. So that's the first thing. It puts us in perspective. The second thing is there's a famous Midrashic text, a text of commentary on this scene from Kohelet Rabbah, which says, "See God's work, for who can repair what God has twisted? At the time when God created Adam, the first human being, God took this Adam, this human being, around to the trees of the Garden of Eden and said to Adam, 'See my works, how beautiful and praiseworthy they are. Everything that I have created, I created them for you. Take care not to damage and destroy my world, for if you damage it, there is no one after you to repair it.'" These texts, the text of creation, the texts that feed into the concept of Shabbat, this concept of ceasing from our own creating as human beings to appreciate God's world, are fundamental to the very, very beginning of the Hebrew Bible and all of Jewish tradition that flows through it, recognizing that everything we have, including our very own bodies, are things that we did not create ourselves, but that we utilize them and we use them for hopefully good things, to praise, to labor, and to love in the world.
How do you plan to make your congregation, B'rith Shalom in Bethlehem, more aware and active?
Our community is pretty engaged, but because of our religious tradition and its understanding of our connection to the world around us and the environment in particular. So we've certainly cut down our energy use by changing over to more sustainable LED light fixtures throughout our building and surrounding area parking. We make a really dedicated effort to recycle and also to compost as well, along with a wonderful other congregation that uses our facilities, Congregation Am Haskalah. So both communities make an effort to do this, and we plant trees. Part of the Jewish tradition is that we have four New Years, and one of them is the New Year for Trees, which is the foundation, ancient foundation, for like an Earth Day, if you will, or an Arbor Day. And so we have a certain holiday called Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat, which just happened a few weeks ago, where we talk all about the environment and learn about it, eat different types of fruits and vegetables, and recognize what we need to do, not only as a community, but as individuals, to cut back our carbon footprint.
That is so helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for thinking of us.
We also welcome Matilda Kitabwala, a member of the Cathedral Church of the Nativity and a recent graduate of the American University with a Bachelor of Environmental Science degree. She's here to tell us why she, as a younger person, wants to work for climate justice. What motivates you to become involved with Green Faith's efforts?
Yeah, so I grew up in a multicultural and a multi-faith family. My mom's side of the family is Christian, and my dad's side of the family is Muslim. And so my brother and I were raised Christian. We go to the cathedral. And so we always kind of had this awareness of other religions. And so I think I was really drawn to Green Faith's intersectional and interfaith platform. And I studied environmental science in school, and I just graduated last spring. And so I thought that joining Green Faith and Green Faith's efforts would be a really good way to use my environmental skills and also on a more personal level, you know, be able to use my faith in a way that can do some good in the world around me as well as in the local environment.
What do you hope happens as a result of the March 11th action? And also, what do you hope happens as a result globally?
Yeah, so I really hope that people of faith in the Lehigh Valley, different faith communities, and individuals who maybe don't have a faith community can see our actions, see the things that we're putting out, you know, on this radio broadcast and on social media and things. They can recognize the importance of taking local action. I hope that they feel inspired by our actions, and I hope that they feel like maybe empowered to make their own change in their daily lives and to take more sustainable actions in their daily lives. And I really believe that faith communities, no matter what religious background you have, really have a unique ability to bring communities together and can make really positive change in their environments, in their communities. And I think globally, I spent a few months in Kenya in 2019. And when I was there, I was really able to see the impacts on a global level of climate change. And I think it was, you know, I've always had an awareness of climate change, and, you know, I've always tried to live a sustainable life, but it was really there that it really clicked for me was, you know, watching when I was up in the north in the desert and having to watch the local women there walk for miles to get their water and to have to work so much harder to sustain themselves because of climate change. That really had an impact on me. So long story short, I really hope My hope for global action is that governments and organizations, specifically the fossil fuel industries, I really hope that they come to their senses through action of organizations like Green Faith. I really hope that they start to realize that the clock is ticking and that they're the ones who need to be held responsible. And we as individuals and as communities need to hold our governments accountable. And so I really hope that we are able to hold accountable our governments and hold accountable the organizations that are largely responsible for climate change in order to make a lasting impact and really mitigate the challenges that climate change are disproportionately having on communities.
The global issue is extremely important and extremely urgent. There's also some personal things. What are some things that you personally do to help the environment?
So one thing that I've really been working on lately is my consumption. I have really been trying to cut down on the things that I'm buying. I've been trying to only buy secondhand clothes. I've actually been learning how to make my own clothes. I've bought a sewing machine for myself for Christmas this year. So I've been learning how to sew my own clothes and how to remake clothes and upcycle clothes that maybe don't fit me anymore or that I am not wearing anymore to kind of make them something that I would wear again. So that's something that I've been doing. I also try to reduce my plastic usage, take shorter showers. I drive a hybrid car, which is kind of the way that things are going anyways. But definitely, I've been really trying to work on my consumption and to reuse things as I can and to really ask myself before I buy something whether or not I really, really need it.
I'm so glad you said all of those things. It kind of confirms some of the things I also do and feel sometimes a little lonely about. So thank you.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely. Especially in this culture that we live in. It's a very overconsumption culture.
Are there any environmental issues locally that particularly interest you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the Lehigh Valley is my home. I grew up here, and growing up, our neighborhood, it was kind of the only neighborhood around. There was farmland everywhere and not a lot of traffic and things. And so we could go and we could go on walks around and go for bike rides and not have to worry about traffic or anything like that. But really over the past probably 10 or so years, there's been a lot more development around us. there's been strip malls and subdivisions and all sorts of development happening. So I've really watched the natural environment around me kind of disappear. And this was before I got into environmental science and things. And so that really impacted me. And that's something that really kind of led me to pursue a degree in environmental science. I think my hope for our local environment and local change is for our government and for the development companies to really put more thought into sustainability when doing city planning. I think city planning is sustainable city planning, and sustainable building design is something that I'm really interested in. And so my hope for local change is that sustainability and environmental justice are considered more when development is happening. Another local issue that I am really passionate about is environmental justice and environmental racism, which, for those who don't know, environmental racism is the disproportionate impact of climate change on marginalized communities. And that is something that I think is really a problem in the Lehigh Valley, especially with air pollution. You know, there's a really high rate of asthma, and those asthma rates are disproportionately impacting communities of color. And so that also has to do with food scarcity and there not being enough access to food in some of the downtown areas. They don't have grocery stores that offer fresh produce and healthy food options in the Lehigh Valley.
Matilda, thank you for your dedication to the cause of Earth Care and for your time with us today.
Thank you, Marcy.
We are grateful for Father Fletcher Harper, Rabbi Michael Singer, Reverend Pam Payne, and Matilda Kitabwala for helping us to understand how faith can motivate action on caring for our Earth. For more information on activities of March 11th, go to www.greenfaith.org. For WDIY News, I'm Marcy Lightwood.